Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents HBR's 10 Must-Reads on Lifelong Learning by Harvard Business Review, narrated by Terry Schnaubelt and Steve Menash. Publisher's note: this audiobook has bonus material of visual elements supporting the text. Please contact whomever you purchase this audiobook from to request the material. Learning to Learn by Erica Anderson. Idea in brief. The ever-increasing pace of change in today's organizations requires that executives understand and then quickly respond to constant shifts in how their businesses operate and how work must get done. That means you must resist your innate biases against doing new things in new ways, scan the horizon for growth opportunities, and push yourself to acquire drastically different capabilities while still doing your existing job. To succeed, you must be willing to experiment and become a novice over and over again, which, for most of us, is an extremely discomforting proposition. Over decades of work with managers, the author has found that people who do succeed at this kind of learning have four well-developed attributes: aspiration, self-awareness, curiosity, and vulnerability. They have a deep desire to understand and master new skills. They see themselves very clearly, they're constantly thinking of and asking good questions, and they tolerate their own mistakes as they move up the curve. Anderson has identified some fairly simple mental strategies that anyone can use to boost these attributes. End of Idea in Brief section. Organizations today are in constant flux. Industries are consolidating, new business models are emerging, new technologies are being developed, and consumer behaviors are evolving. For executives, the ever-increasing pace of change can be especially demanding. It forces them to understand and quickly respond to big shifts in the way companies operate and how work must get done. In the words of Ari DeGeis, a business theorist, "The ability to learn faster than your competitors may be the only sustainable competitive advantage." I'm not talking about relaxed armchair or even structured classroom learning. I'm talking about resisting the bias against doing new things, scanning the horizon for growth opportunities, and pushing yourself to acquire radically different capabilities while still performing your job. That requires a willingness to experiment and become a novice again and again, an extremely discomforting notion for most of us. Over decades of coaching and consulting to thousands of executives in a variety of industries, however, my colleagues and I have come across people who succeed at this kind of learning. We've identified four attributes they have in spades: aspiration, self-awareness, curiosity, and vulnerability. They truly want to understand and master new skills. They see themselves very clearly. They constantly think of and ask good questions, and they tolerate their own mistakes as they move up the learning curve. Of course, these things come more naturally to some people than to others. But drawing on research in psychology and management, as well as our work with clients, we have identified some fairly simple mental tools anyone can develop to boost all four attributes, even those that are often considered fixed: aspiration, curiosity, and vulnerability. Aspiration. It's easy to see aspiration as either there or not. You want to learn a new skill or you don't. You have ambition and motivation or you lack them. But great learners can raise their aspiration level, and that's key because everyone is guilty of sometimes resisting development that is critical to success. Think about the last time your company adopted a new approach, overhauled a reporting system, replaced a CRM platform, revamped the supply chain. Were you eager to go along? I doubt it. Your initial response was probably to justify not learning. It will take too long. The old way works just fine for me. I bet it's just a flash in the pan. When confronted with new learning, this is often our first roadblock. We focus on the negative and unconsciously reinforce our lack of aspiration. When we do want to learn something, we focus on the positive, what we'll gain from learning it, and envision a happy future in which we're reaping those rewards that propels us into action. Researchers have found that shifting your focus from challenges to benefits is a good way to increase your aspiration to do initially unappealing things. For example, when Nicole Detling, a psychologist at the University of Utah, encouraged aerialists and speed skaters to picture themselves benefiting from a particular skill, they were much more motivated to practice it. A few years ago, I coached a CMO who was hesitant to learn about big data. Even though most of his peers were becoming converts, he'd convinced himself that he didn't have the time to get into it and that it wouldn't be that important to his industry. I finally realized that this was an aspiration problem and encouraged him to think of ways that getting up to speed on data-driven marketing could help him personally. He acknowledged that it would be useful to know more about how various segments of his customer base were responding to his team's online advertising and in-store marketing campaigns. I then invited him to imagine the situation he'd be in a year later if he was getting that data. He started to show some excitement, saying, "We would be testing different approaches simultaneously, both in-store and online. We'd have good, solid information about which ones were working and for whom, and we could save a lot of time and money by jettisoning the less effective approaches faster." I could almost feel his aspiration rising. Within a few months, he'd hired a data analytics expert, made a point of learning from her on a daily basis, and begun to rethink key campaigns in light of his new perspective and skills. Self-awareness. Over the past decade or so, most leaders have grown familiar with the concept of self-awareness. They understand that they need to solicit feedback and recognize how others see them. But when it comes to the need for learning, our assessments of ourselves, what we know and don't know, skills we have and don't have, can still be woefully inaccurate. In one study conducted by David Dunning, a Cornell University psychologist, 94% of college professors reported that they were doing above-average work. Clearly, almost half were wrong, many extremely so, and their self-deception surely diminished any appetite for development. Only 6% of respondents saw themselves as having a lot to learn about being an effective teacher. In my work, I've found that the people who evaluate themselves most accurately start the process inside their own heads. They accept that their perspective is often biased or flawed, and then strive for greater objectivity, which leaves them much more open to hearing and acting on others' opinions. The trick is to pay attention to how you talk to yourself about yourself and then question the validity of that self-talk. Let's say your boss has told you that your team isn't strong enough and that you need to get better at assessing and developing talent. Your initial reaction might be something like, "What? She's wrong. My team is strong." Most of us respond defensively to that sort of criticism. But as soon as you recognize what you're thinking, ask yourself, "Is that accurate? What facts do I have to support it?" In the process of reflection, you may discover that you're wrong and your boss is right, or that the truth lies somewhere in between. You cover for some of your reports by doing things yourself, and one of them is inconsistent in meeting deadlines. However, two others are stars. Your inner voice is most useful when it reports the facts of a situation in this balanced way. It should serve as fair witness so that you're open to seeing the areas in which you could improve and how to do so. One CEO I know was convinced that he was a great manager and leader. He did have tremendous industry knowledge and great instincts about growing his business, and his board acknowledged those strengths. But he listened only to people who affirmed his view of himself and dismissed input about shortcomings. His team didn't feel engaged or inspired. When he finally started to question his assumptions, "Is everyone on my team focused and productive? If not, is there something I could be doing differently?" he became much more aware of his developmental needs and open to feedback. He realized that it wasn't enough to have strategic insights. He had to share them with his reports and invite discussion, and then set clear priorities. Backed by quarterly team and individual goals, regular progress checks, and troubleshooting sessions. Changing your inner narrative. Unsupportive self-talk. "I don't need to learn this. Supportive self-talk. What would my future look like if I did? Unsupportive self-talk. I'm already fine at this. Supportive self-talk. Am I really? How do I compare with my peers? Unsupportive self-talk. This is boring. Supportive self-talk. I wonder why others find it interesting. Unsupportive self-talk. I'm terrible at this. Supportive self-talk. I'm making beginner mistakes, but I'll get better. Curiosity. Kids are relentless in their urge to learn and master. As John Medina writes in Brain Rules, this need for explanation is so powerfully stitched into their experience that some scientists describe it as a drive, just as hunger and thirst and sex are drives. Curiosity is what makes us try something until we can do it, or think about something until we understand it. Great learners retain this childhood drive or regain it through another application of self-talk. Instead of focusing on and reinforcing initial disinterest in a new subject, they learn to ask themselves curious questions about it and follow those questions up with actions. Carol Sansone, a psychology researcher, has found, for example, that people can increase their willingness to tackle necessary tasks by thinking about how they could do the work differently to make it more interesting. In other words, they change their self-talk from, "This is boring," to, "I wonder if I could." You can employ the same strategy in your working life by noticing the language you use in thinking about things that already interest you. How, why, I wonder, and drawing on it when you need to become curious. Then take just one step to answer a question you've asked yourself. Read an article, query an expert, find a teacher, join a group, whatever feels easiest. I recently worked with a corporate lawyer whose firm had offered her a bigger job that required knowledge of employment law, an area she regarded as the single most boring aspect of the legal profession. Rather than trying to persuade her otherwise, I asked her what she was curious about and why. "Swing dancing," she said. "I'm fascinated by the history of it. I wonder how it developed and whether it was a response to the Depression. It's such a happy art form. I watch great dancers and think about why they do certain things." I explained that her curious language could be applied to employment law. "I wonder how anyone could find it interesting," she said jokingly. I told her that was actually an okay place to start. She began thinking out loud about possible answers. Maybe some lawyers see it as a way to protect both their employees and their companies. And then proposed a few other curious questions. How might knowing more about this make me a better lawyer? Soon she was intrigued enough to connect with a colleague who was experienced in employment law. She asked him what he found interesting about it and how he had acquired his knowledge, and his answers prompted other questions. Over the following months, she learned what she needed to know for that aspect of her new role. The next time you're asked to learn something at the office, or sense that you should because colleagues are doing so, encourage yourself to ask and answer a few curious questions about it. Why are others so excited about this? How might this make my job easier? And then seek out the answers. You'll need to find just one thing about a boring topic that sparks your curiosity. Vulnerability. Once we become good or even excellent at some things, we rarely want to go back to being not good at other things. Yes, we're now taught to embrace experimentation and fast failure at work, but we're also taught to play to our strengths. So the idea of being bad at something for weeks or months, feeling awkward and slow, having to ask dumb, "I don't know what you're talking about," questions, and needing step-by-step guidance again and again is extremely scary. Great learners allow themselves to be vulnerable enough to accept that beginner state. In fact, they become reasonably comfortable in it by managing their self-talk. Generally, when we're trying something new and doing badly at it, we think terrible thoughts. "I hate this. I'm such an idiot. I'll never get this right. This is so frustrating." That static in our brains leaves little bandwidth for learning. The ideal mindset for a beginner is both vulnerable and balanced. "I'm going to be bad at this to start with because I've never done it before, and I know I can learn to do it over time." In fact, the researchers Robert Wood and Albert Bandura found in the late 1980s that when people are encouraged to expect mistakes and learn from them early in the process of acquiring new skills, the result is heightened interest, persistence, and better performance. I know a senior sales manager from the United States who was recently tapped to run the Asia-Pacific region for his company. He was having a hard time acclimating to living overseas and working with colleagues from other cultures, and he responded by leaning on his sales expertise rather than acknowledging his beginner status in the new environment. I helped him recognize his resistance to being a cultural novice, and he was able to shift his self-talk from, "This is so uncomfortable, I'll just focus on what I already know," to, "I have a lot to learn about Asian cultures. I'm a quick study, so I'll be able to pick it up." He told me it was an immediate relief. Simply acknowledging his novice status made him feel less foolish and more relaxed. He started asking the necessary questions, and soon he was seen as open, interested, and beginning to understand his new environment. The ability to acquire new skills and knowledge quickly and continually is crucial to success in a world of rapid change. If you don't currently have the aspiration, self-awareness, curiosity, and vulnerability to be an effective learner, these simple tools can help you get there.
Making Yourself Indispensable by John H. Zenger, Joseph R. Folkman, and Scott K. Ettinger. Idea in brief. Good leaders can become exceptional by developing just a few of their strengths to the highest level, but not by merely doing more of the same. Instead, they need to engage in the business equivalent of cross-training, that is, to enhance complementary skills that will enable them to make fuller use of their strengths. For example, technical skills can become more effective when communication skills improve, making a leader's expertise more apparent and more accessible. Once a few of their strengths have reached the level of outstanding, leaders become indispensable to their organizations despite the weaknesses they may have. End of idea in brief section. A manager we'll call Tom was a mid-level sales executive at a Fortune 500 company. After a dozen or so years there, he was thriving. He made his numbers, he was well-liked, he got consistently positive reviews. He applied for a promotion that would put him in charge of a high-profile, worldwide product alignment initiative, confident that he was the top candidate and that this was the next logical move for him, a seemingly perfect fit for his skills and ambitions. His track record was solid. He'd made no stupid mistakes or career-limiting moves, and he'd had no run-ins with upper management. He was stunned, then, when a colleague with less experience got the job. What was the matter? As far as Tom could tell, nothing. Everyone was happy with his work, his manager assured him, and a recent 360-degree assessment confirmed her view. Tom was at or above the norm in every area, strong not only in delivering results, but also in problem-solving, strategic thinking, and inspiring others to top performance. "No need to reinvent yourself," she said. "Just keep doing what you're doing. Go with your strengths." But how? Tom was at a loss. Should he think more strategically, become even more inspiring, practice problem-solving more intently? It's pretty easy and straightforward to improve on a weakness. You can get steady, measurable results through linear development. That is, by learning and practicing basic techniques. But the data from our decades of work with tens of thousands of executives all over the world has shown us that developing strengths is very different. Doing more of what you already do well yields only incremental improvement. To get appreciably better at it, you have to work on complementary skills, what we call nonlinear development. This has long been familiar to athletes as cross-training. A novice runner, for example, benefits from doing stretching exercises and running a few times a week, gradually increasing mileage to build up endurance and muscle memory. But an experienced marathoner won't get significantly faster merely by running ever longer distances. To reach the next level, he needs to supplement that regimen by building up complementary skills through weight training, swimming, bicycling, interval training, yoga, and the like. So it is with leadership competencies. To move from good to much better, you need to engage in the business equivalent of cross-training. If you're technically adept, for instance, delving even more deeply into technical manuals won't get you nearly as far as honing a complementary skill such as communication, which will make your expertise more apparent and accessible to your coworkers. In this article, we provide a simple guide to becoming a far more effective leader. We will find out how Tom identified his strengths, decided which one to focus on, and which complementary skill to develop, and what the results were. The process is straightforward, but complements are not always obvious. So, first, we'll take a closer look at the leadership equivalent of cross-training. The interaction effect. In cross-training, the combination of two activities produces an improvement, an interaction effect, substantially greater than either one can produce on its own. There's nothing mysterious here. Combining diet with exercise, for example, has long been known to be substantially more effective in losing weight than either diet or exercise alone. In our previous research, we found 16 differentiating leadership competencies that correlate strongly with positive business outcomes, such as increased profitability, employee engagement, revenue, and customer satisfaction. Among those 16, we wondered, could we find pairs that would produce significant interaction effects? We searched through our database of more than a 250,000 360-degree surveys of some 30,000 developing leaders for pairings that resulted in far higher scores on overall leadership effectiveness than either attribute did on its own. The results were unambiguous. Take, for example, the competencies focuses on results and builds relationships. Only 14% of leaders who were reasonably strong, that is, scored in the 75th percentile in focusing on results but less so in building relationships, reached the extraordinary leadership level, the 90th percentile in overall leadership effectiveness. Similarly, only 12% of those who were reasonably strong in building relationships but less so in focusing on results reached that level. But when an individual performed well in both categories, something dramatic happened. Fully 72% of those in the 75th percentile in both categories reached the 90th percentile in overall leadership effectiveness. We measured the degree of correlation between overall leadership effectiveness and all possible pairings of our 16 differentiating competencies to learn which pairings were the most powerful. We also matched our 16 competencies with other leadership skills and measured how those pairs correlated with overall leadership effectiveness. We discovered that each of the 16 has up to a dozen associated behaviors, which we call competency companions, that were highly correlated with leadership excellence when combined with the differentiating competency. Consider the main competency displays honesty and integrity, How would a leader go about improving a relative strength in this area? By being more honest? We've heard that answer to the question many times. That's not particularly useful advice. If an executive were weak in this area, we could recommend various ways to improve. Behave more consistently. Avoid saying one thing and doing another. Follow through on stated commitments, and so on. But a leader with high integrity is most likely already doing those things. Our Competency Companion research suggests a practical path forward. For example, assertiveness is among the behaviors that, when paired with honesty and integrity, correlate most strongly with high levels of overall leadership effectiveness. We don't mean to imply a causal relationship here. Assertiveness doesn't make someone honest, and integrity doesn't produce assertiveness. But if a highly principled leader learned to become more assertive, he might be more likely to speak up and act with the courage of his convictions, thus applying his strength more widely or frequently to become a more effective leader. Our data suggest other ways in which a competency companion can reinforce a leadership strength. It might make the strength more apparent, as in the case of the technically strong leader who improves her ability to communicate. Or skills learned in developing the competency companion might be profitably applied to the main competency. A leader strong in innovativeness, for instance, might learn how to champion change, thus encouraging his team to achieve results in new and more creative ways. What skills will magnify my strengths? Our research shows that 16 leadership competencies correlate strongly with positive business outcomes. Each of them has up to a dozen competency companions whose development will strengthen the core skill. Character displays honesty and integrity. Shows concern and consideration for others. Is trustworthy. Demonstrates optimism. Is assertive. Inspires and motivates others. Deals well with ambiguity. Is decisive. Focuses on results. Personal capability. Exhibits technical/professional expertise. Solves problems and analyzes issues. Builds relationships and networks. Communicates powerfully and broadly. Pursues excellence. Takes initiative. Develops others. Displays honesty and integrity. Acts in the team's best interest. Solves problems and analyzes issues. Takes initiative. Is organized and good at planning. Is decisive. Innovates. Wants to tackle challenges. Develops strategic perspective. Acts independently. Has technical expertise. Communicates powerfully and broadly. Innovates. Is willing to take risks and challenge the status quo. Supports others in risk-taking. Solves problems and analyzes issues. Champions change. Learns quickly from success and failure. Develops strategic perspective. Takes initiative. Practices self-development. Listens. Is open to others' ideas. Respects others. Displays honesty and integrity. Inspires and motivates others, provides effective feedback and development, takes initiative, is willing to take risks and challenge the status quo. Getting results. Focuses on results. Is organized and good at planning. Displays honesty and integrity. Anticipates problems. Sees desired results clearly. Provides effective feedback and development. Establishes stretch goals. Is personally accountable. Is quick to act. Provides rewards and recognition. creates a high-performance team, marshals adequate resources, innovates, establishes stretch goals, inspires and motivates others.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?